Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.
Hey guys, Adam Ray here. Welcome back to the About Last Night podcast. If you haven't watched the show before, click subscribe right here. If you have, thank you for coming on back. This is where you get the full episodes, clips, and all that extra podcast jazz. Today's episode is a banger. Jesse Joyce, writer of the Jimmy Kimmel Live Show, comedian, and now author of the new book, Killing the Guys Who Killed the Guy Who Killed Lincoln, a nutty story about Edwin Booth and Boston Corbett. Holy shit. This is a bonker story and an even crazier, hilarious historical book written by Jesse. The origin story of how he wrote this story is insane. You'll hear all about it in this episode. We talk Lincoln, we talk Trump, we talk Kimmel, we talk Greg Giraldo, who brought Jesse and I together when I hosted for Jesse and Greg at the Irvine Improv in 2010. And it's just a fun episode. Stories for days. Jesse's a gangster in the business, originally from Pittsburgh. And his new book is one you should go get. And I'm going to have Jesse tell you where you can get that book right here.
Oh, yeah, if you want to get it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I have a code. You just go try.scribd. Scribd is spelled S-C-R-I-B-D. Try.scribd.com/Jesse Joyce, and you get a free 2-month subscription to check it out.
Thanks, Jesse. Follow Jesse on Instagram and Twitter right there. Follow me at Adam Ray Comedy on TikTok, Threads, and IG. Follow the podcast at ALN Podcast. Tour dates, oh, baby. This week. Where am I? I'll tell you where I am. I'm with Sal Vulcano in Georgia, Macon, Georgia, Athens, and Savannah with Sal Vulcano. Come out and see us. Tickets at salvulcanocomedy.com. Vegas, thank you very much for coming out. The shows at the Laugh Factory were phenomenal, and I thank you for coming out and bringing the fun vibes. A lot of tour dates coming up for the rest of the year. San Diego, D.C., and a few more dates with Sal in Chicago before 2024 shows its head. All the ticket information at AdamRayComedy.com. Of course, check out the Dr. Phil Bill Burr interview right here. And, wow, October 17th, big show. Dr. Phil live at the Comedy Store with Adam Devine and Honors Home. Tickets at ComedyStore.com for that. And, of course, check out the Jeremy's House special on my YouTube channel, also filmed at the Comedy Store, out right now. Check that out. And I think that's it. All your Adam Ray merch at AdamRayComedy.com. Tickets there as well. But now, enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with the one and only Jesse Joyce.
Hey, it's Herbert, and you're listening to the About Last Night podcast, you slippery little son of a bitch.
Welcome back to the show, my man.
Hey.
Jesse Joyce, in the house. Writer, comic, father, actor?
No, I mean, I do like little shitty bits on Kimmel.
On Kimmel.
But yeah, but like just because I'm a
you're there.
Writer there. Yeah, so. Or people, like as a goof, will pitch me in the bit, you know, so.
So your IMDb page is pretty scarce.
Yeah, it was supposed to, like, I played just like a looming gangly monsters a lot, you know? So like I've done like Bigfoot and like fucking
wait, in something Texas. Non-Kimmel?
No. Like like on Kimmel, whenever like somebody writes a bit and they're like, we need like a you know, terrifying hulking presence. Cause you know, like writers are all like, you know, kind of soft little dorks, most of them.
Yeah.
And I'm 6'4". And so like
you're kind of an anomaly.
Like so it's just I always get roped into like, hey, you be Michael Myers or you be the Texas Chainsaw Massacre guy, or
so
you be
funny.
Bigfoot or whatever. So like I'm always just these like by writer standards I'm enormous,
right?
You know? So yeah.
I will say this: there is something about the writer strike ending,
yeah,
that I think has made, and we were just talking about this before we started, that's made. Well, you were saying that what Seth Meyers said. What about the
no?
Show?
It wasn't Seth Meyers. It was his head writer.
His head writer
had a joke on Twitter that was that was I will never again take this job for granted until Monday at lunchtime, which like was what it felt like, was just that we were all like so thrilled to be back, and then kind of immediately it was like, fuck, I got a lot of work to do, you know, like it was immediately like kicking into these, to these bits that like I have some like, you know, dumb like game on the street with like Hollywood Boulevard weirdos,
yeah.
You know, and they were like, is that ready to go? And I'm like, I don't even remember what the fuck it is, like, you know,
wow.
like all this stuff
that
was
that
like pitched
memory back.
Like 5 months ago,
yeah.
You know what I mean? And like, so I had to watch me in rehearsal doing the bit and go like, oh yeah, yeah, oh right, that thing, yeah,
wow.
Sure, I remember that, yeah, of
which,
course.
Which game so, is that? The whole?
Oh, it's like a new thing that we haven't done yet, but
gotcha.
It's like incredibly stupid and just like very easy, but it's really more about like finding, you know, Hollywood Boulevard goofs.
How great of a luxury is it to have your show, the Jimmy Kimmel Live show, on the boulevard where you have...
That's one way to look at it,
the
sure.
airport,
yeah.
You know, of who's who. I mean, the boulevard, the Vegas airport, and maybe a comedy club, I think, is the most diverse group of people you're going to find on the
yeah.
planet.
Yeah, you just have to recognize it is also the workplace I have to go to every day.
Right.
And like,
so you're
like,
saying...
So I got to walk out of my building over to the studio and like walk past like 100... Elmos that reek of urine, and then like kind of navigate this gauntlet of dipshits trying to take a picture of Winnie the Pooh's star, which like it's like,
wait, Pooh has a star?
Yeah, of course he. Yeah, sure, he's a famous
what
cartoon bear.
Fuck?
But like the point, like I'll even
and
give
Joe
it to
Jonas
you.
Doesn't.
Does he? Probably not. I don't know. Well, you got to pay for it too. You know that, right? You got to buy your
first star.
Yeah. Yeah, you
it's
have to like
to
pay for it and like maintain it. You got to pay like an annual
whoa.
Maintain your star.
Whoa.
Yeah, yeah. So that's like a thing. So, like, I'm not saying it's a scam, but the point is like, fine. If you come from like, you know, whatever Tulsa, and you desperately like
yes.
are like a Burt Reynolds fan,
yeah,
and then you see his name on the sidewalk, like, sure, okay, take a picture of that.
Yes,
that's still dumb because it's just literally his name on a sidewalk.
Yep.
But okay.
Guarantee
but
you're never looking back at that photo.
To like Winnie the Pooh, like Donald Duck's star. They'll just like, oh my God.
Wow.
You know, like,
what type
Bethany,
of
get over
that?
Here. It's yeah. Donald Duck's star. And they all like take pictures of this fucking piece of sidewalk with Donald Duck's name on it.
Yeah.
And like, and that's in my way because I have to bustle back and forth
wow.
down the sidewalk. So, you know, yes, it is like a real gem to be able to find goofballs on the street when we're doing bits. But, you know, the daily gauntlet of trying to navigate around that
yeah.
can also get
exhausting.
Yeah, exhausting, but it's fine. So,
some of those
I'm already complaining. I'm like, it's week one of me having a job again, and I don't mean to be like, I'm very happy.
No, this is there's a difference between complaining and comedically venting.
Yeah, sure.
And you're observing, you're doing what your job is.
Right.
Observe and report.
Yeah.
So. And also, when you have, again, been gifted the boulevard as your, you know, walkthrough. I mean, there's got to be things.
I've written for the Oscars a couple times. I always think it's very funny when the VO, like Voice of God thing, will announce like, "We'll be right back with the Academy Awards live from Hollywood and Highland." Like they say Hollywood and Highland, like it's this glamorous, like,
oh no,
oh my God,
there's
Hollywood
a guy
Highland.
Jerking off on another guy,
that's what I mean.
Jerking off onto Elmo's costume.
Yeah, it's like you could always find a pizza box with poop in it, like on
pizza
like,
box with poop in it, or a sandal with cum on it. That's Hollywood and Highland,
exactly.
And that should be what it is.
So that's what, yeah, that's exactly. I even pitched a joke for the Oscars that was like, you know, to get the Voice of God to go like, you know, we'll be right back with the Oscars live. Live right next door to the Walgreens where they're always something where somebody's always shouting like because that's what it's like.
Yeah,
like,
dude. Yeah. So. We'll be right back with Selma Blair,
yeah.
Selma Hayek, Kerry Washington, and potentially a fight between SpongeBob and a guy dressed as Jack Sparrow. Who wins the string cheese? Who wins the Oscar for best actor? We'll find out.
Yeah. So so it's like it's funny because it's like that one day of the year, it's like the most glamorous place in America.
No way.
And then the rest of the time, it's just like
people don't even know what Hollywood Highland is.
It's the Times Square of Los Angeles. You
it
know
is.
What I mean? Like so, yeah. So
yeah, the knockoff version.
Which I also worked in years and years ago.
Times Square.
I worked in. Yeah, I was a waiter at Planet Hollywood like 25 years ago, very briefly. And so I'd have to run that gauntlet too of like, you know, mentally ill cookie monsters to get to work. You know, like so.
What's worse, the Times Square or the Hollywood Boulevard? You know.
I feel I know, it's tough. Like,
they just got their own flavor, right?
It's hard to tell. Like, because I was a younger guy, so I don't know if I was just not attuned to the potential dangers.
Right.
You know what I mean? I was in my early 20s.
You're a little more aloof.
And then, you know, now I'm a father of two in my 40s. So I feel like that's an unfair. It's not a scientific.
Right.
Because, like, you know, I don't know. Am I more afraid of
probably
Pete on Elmo?
Yeah.
Because I'm in my 40s and I have shit to lose.
I think you're more afraid of pee in general as you get older.
Yeah. Well, no. Well, but also when you have kids, like, you're much more comfortable around urine.
Gotcha.
So, like, there is that. So, like, my bed is pissed in a lot more, like, more now that I have a 4 and a 6 year old than any time since I got sober 18 years ago. There was a lot that, like, so
wow.
That's been.
Did you ever wet the bed trajectory. From drinking?
Oh, sure. Of course.
I think,
yeah. Like, you don't quit drinking, like, if you don't piss the bed. You know what I mean? That's one
of the. Didn't Greg Giraldo have a great bit about, I want to say it was on Good Day to Cross the River, about. I don't know if it was peeing. Was the one the bit about coming home drunk and still wearing your motorcycle?
Oh yeah, 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 yeah.
But I want to say there was a pee in the bed joke in there somewhere, but maybe not.
He was like naked wearing a motorcycle.
That's what
helmet
it was. Okay, yeah,
yeah, yeah.
I just assumed nude in bed, urine is shortly behind.
He may have.
Man, pee in the bed. I think I want to say I did it in college.
Okay. Someone came in, a drunk girl one time came. I was like living on a floor with a bunch of. She came into my room looking for a different. She was on the wrong floor.
No,
and came in and peed in my bed, and then left. Like, so that was a. It was
get
a really confusing. Yeah,
out.
Yeah, yeah. So that happened one time. So
that's,
I still. It was mysterious. I don't know who it was.
That's like when someone gets in your car and mistakes it for an Uber.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then pees in your car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've done that too. Like I've like tried the door handle of someone else's.
Oh, I've gotten
car when they're
in
the driver's seat.
I'll give you the responses I've gotten from the drivers when I've gotten in the back.
Mm-hmm.
Only out of the 5 times I've probably done it in however long Uber's been around, I want to say coming up on probably 10 years, right?
Something, yeah.
And 4 out of the 5 times it was this. Hey, what the fuck, man? And then the one time it was, whoop. What are you doing? And I was like, oh, shit. Oh, you're not Adam? He was like, nah. And the guy, thankfully, was baked out of his mind, so I think he was more like,
sure,
you know, confused that it probably wouldn't have been too far off for him to shortly after that be like, have you been here the whole time? Because he didn't look like he knew that he was driving.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He might just go like, oh, shit, I forgot I'm supposed to drive you home.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Wait, how has, a lot of questions here.
Sure.
Being a dad.
Yeah.
How has that, your
congratulations on getting married, but I noticed your wedding, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I texted you about
yes,
that, but
coming up on
nice
a year.
Yeah, how about that?
Yeah.
Congratulations.
The kids are probably shortly around the corner.
For real?
I think so.
We go
back and forth.
Yeah.
And I've been heavily pitched by a handful of comics in the last couple months
they're leaning toward yes.
Yeah. They're
do
just
they
like,
have kids?
Oh, yeah. They're just like, why aren't you doing it? I don't think I've only ever met one person who truly is like, I want my old life back.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's a bummer.
Yeah, totally.
Okay.
But he also, I think, was saying that a little bit for dramatic effect.
Right.
He also, he seems tired.
Yeah.
But he just was like, he's like, dude, every other day I feel like I'm going to take one of them to the hospital because like one of them's shoving a car up their ass. I'm like,
yeah,
is Steve-O your kid? And then.
No. They all do that.
They all do that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he just seemed like, I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
But I was like, I feel like you have to if they're all still alive. And I know, and I'm like, you're pretty competent, like from just knowing you these past few years. But I don't know. How has it changed your comedy? And how has it changed, I guess, going back to work now? Because I'm sure there was a little bit of a, I don't know, like getting to spend that much time with them, right? Was pretty.
Yeah, well, weirdly, I mean, like the COVID was kind of strike training wheels in a way. You know what I mean? Because it was like. I mean, I was lucky enough that we got to work through COVID from home, you know, so we were still writing the show. But, you know, I was just like, had them around all the time. Like, so, which has been like most of their lives, you know, because they're pretty young, you know.
They're how old?
6 and 4.
Wow.
So my daughter was like pretty much all COVID. Like, so she kind of, there was like a few months before it happened.
Right.
So, so, I mean, I'm kind of like, to be honest with you, like used to having them around like kind of all the time, you know, so that wasn't. And I was like trying to cobble together what I could during the strike to like work on things I could like help write other guys stand up and that kind of shit.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And this book, you know, so that's which we'll talk about later. It made it impossible for me to do stand up for the first 2 years, you know? So like I'm kind of now, the strike also helped me like now be able to get back into stand up, but I kind of had to take a break from it.
Yeah.
Like, because it was just like, what a fucking unfair nightmare to like leave for the weekend and like, yeah, like I work all week doing like writing and then to like make my wife have to deal with them on her own. Like,
yeah,
that's not fair at all. Like, that's a,
you got
to
find that
really
balance.
Shitty thing to do because they're, yeah, just, you know, they're impossible to like do on your own, you know? So, but now they like, you can like tell them to brush their teeth and they will. So, like, it's like a real Rubicon that's been crossed. They still like shit themselves, you know, but like, but like they, you can like give them an, a simple
in.
Instruction and they can like follow through.
That's
on
huge,
it.
Huh?
Yeah, very much so. Yeah,
you,
yeah.
No,
so
you
like,
don't have to kind of hold their hand through everything.
Yeah, like,
now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like literally everything. And like, and more just like being sure that they, like, you know, just there was a phase where they're just like every minute of the day, just like actively trying to kill themselves. You know what I mean? Like,
fuck.
So that's like the first couple years is just that. So it's like also, I can't leave. I can't go do stand up. You know what I mean? Like, I can't,
yeah,
just leave her. To,
yeah.
There's two of them to like watch, you know? So
yeah, you can't,
but
just let them babysit each other.
Yeah. Cause you, I think you do need like the number of, you need to either outnumber your kids or have the same number. Like,
gotcha.
I don't do three. That's a fucking, or more. That's a horrendous idea.
Yeah.
You know,
look
like,
at people. I mean, think about like, I don't know.
Like,
the
I have a friend. I have a buddy. He was is a very funny writer, and it was a fascinating like psychological, like sociological study I did on him, and he didn't know it. Was I knew him when he had two kids, and then when he had three kids, and we used to be in a writer's room together, and it was fascinating to watch that the number of jokes he made about killing himself like skyrocketed like 500%, like between two and three. Like when it was two, he was just like stressed out all the time.
Yeah.
When it was three kids, it was like just I should probably just kill us. You know what I mean? Like it was like that. Like,
oh man.
So yeah. So it made me go like, oh, okay, that's like the number that you can have is like,
yeah,
no more than two. Because
it gets,
yeah,
real after
we
that.
Put like a jar on the table, and every time he made a joke about it, he had to put a dollar in the jar. And at the end of the like the season of the show, we had like ended up like donating like $175 to like a suicide hotline. Like,
cause, oh my god.
And that was like a direct result of like, he never did that before a third baby entered the picture.
Wow.
So yeah. So just keep that in mind. If that's a little indicator for you.
Do they know you're funny?
Who, the kids?
Yeah.
Yeah. My son. Well, I don't know if they, I mean, they think I'm funny, but like, you know, they like, it's stupid shit they think is funny, but
yeah,
like, but my son,
but they laugh at you.
Yeah. But he understands like jokes, like on a real sort of romantic, like he'll write,
wow,
like puns and stuff. Like,
wow.
He'll like come up with puns and like share them with me. Like, hey dad, what do you, you know, like,
how awesome is that?
Yeah. Yeah. It's cool. Like, yeah.
What are they good?
No. Well, I mean, whatever. Like they're, I'm impressed as hell. Cause like, I remember when he couldn't do that when,
yep,
I was like,
yep,
just when he was like, he was about to drown in the bathtub every day. So,
yeah. And now
so
he's,
it's nice
to
go like, oh, look, like we would like, we were like building a desk together, like some IKEA bullshit or whatever. And he was like, what did one hammer, you know, like, say, what did one hammer say to the other hammer? I nailed it or whatever. And it was like, oh,
right,
like, oh, that, like, he understands how like wordplay works and how like, you know, like colloquialisms and like he gets like, oh, that's a cliche. And if you say it, you know, like it has a double meaning and,
yeah,
what, you know, like that kind of stuff. Like, so he kind of gets that. So it's like fun to see that, you know?
Yeah,
at least
you didn't. Yeah, so, at least they're like kind of in context too.
Yeah.
And it's not like, you know, what are the foot say to the arm? Like, hey, you know any good Jew bars around here? Like,
no, yeah, yeah,
yeah,
very,
it wasn't,
few. He doesn't understand Judaism at all.
Yeah.
So like,
yeah,
he has a, like, he has a, that hasn't,
that's what,
conversation yet. We're waiting to get into that.
Yeah,
I,
yeah,
but,
I think puns is a good intro into comedy.
Yeah, yeah. But, and also like, if you can just ask Google to tell you a kid's joke, and it will just do it,
oh,
you know?
That's right.
And so, like, so we do that sometimes. It helps him, like, you know, like the, whatever, just like, what do you call it? Alligator in a vest, an investigator, right? And he's like, oh, I get, you,
it's
know, like,
funny.
So it's, yeah, it's like a cute, you know? So.
Do they know?
My daughter doesn't, though,
yeah,
by the way.
No clue.
Because, you know, women aren't.
But do they even know? They can't.
I'm just kidding. That was a joke. No, she's just, because she's four. She doesn't,
yes,
like,
dude,
she hasn't, like, pieced it together quite yet. Like, so, like, my son will, like, get it and, like, like his favorite joke is what? Why does a duck have tail feathers to cover its butt quack? Right? Like he thinks that's
funny.
Right? It's cute. Right?
It is funny.
And then she will just try to do like any animal. You know, she's like, "Why does a hippo have tail feathers to cover its butt?" And it, like, you know what I mean? She's,
right,
like, "Ah, oh, man,
but
like,
real
you don't
close,
get it. Like,
yeah,
you're near it, but yeah." But I think that maybe that something clicks when you're like five or six.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway,
there's another good one.
It's fun.
What do you call a duck that does meth?
A quack addict, right?
Yeah.
Is that what?
Quackhead,
yeah.
Yeah.
Quackhead,
yeah,
right?
Either, yeah, funny.
Yeah, I mean, I can figure out children's jokes. I'm a professional comedy writer at a very high level. Like, you don't have to, like, stump me with fucking kid jokes. I'm not also six.
Wait, like, have they seen you on TV? Do they know that? Can they watch? They don't even know what Kimmel.
No, they don't understand any of that shit. Like, and also, it doesn't matter to kids. It doesn't mean anything to them. Like, they don't have any fucking, you know, like.
So, but wait, like when
my, do you know Max Burgos? He's my agent. He's a very funny dude.
He used to be
good
my
guy.
Agent.
Yeah,
yes.
Right. So, Max, what happened? What did you guys? No,
oh man, I don't know. He came to the premiere of The Heat in 2013, and then just said it better get better than this, and then he went to the get
he's
popcorn.
Funny.
I think, yeah,
that's very funny.
Yeah, I know.
No, but I'm gonna chew nicotine.
Yeah, please.
What
flavor?
It's the fruit kind.
Does it help?
Yeah, I mean, I've been doing it for like 8 years.
Is that Chantix? So that's all I know.
One could say it doesn't work because I've been doing it 8 years, but I have no intention of ever like quitting smoke. Like, I mean, I had to quit smoking, but
yeah,
I have no intention of not chewing nicotine gum.
You have to.
Yeah,
if
I'm
it helps,
keep doing that.
But, now, wait, real quick.
No, what I was going to say is that about kids and their lack of understanding of how this shit works. The Larry the Cable Guy roast, he brought his son, who at the time was like 3 or 4, like it was absolutely like right in the sweetest possible spot for him to give a shit. He like loved Cars, you know, that movie, the Cars movies.
Larry's in that, right? He's got
well, he's like the truck, right? Yeah. He's like the tow truck,
right?
And so I was like, oh my god, dude, you're gonna get to meet the truck, you're gonna get to meet fucking the truck, you know. And then like he met Larry the Cable Guy, and it was like he was so underwhelmed. He was just like, what? This is like a fat old guy, you know what I mean?
It was together.
Like, no, of course, because it doesn't mean anything to them, you know what I mean? So it was like, well, you're not a truck, you know what I mean? Like, like that was kind of the like he had this like incredibly disappointed like expectation that he was gonna meet a talking truck.
Oh my god,
I was just
god.
Like, well, who the fuck is this? Yeah. I don't want to see this fat old man, I want to see a truck. Like, you told me I was gonna see a talking truck,
yeah.
So, yeah, and Larry, to his credit, was like, yeah, I don't know why people do this, like, kids don't get it. Like, you know, so
was he pretty receptive to getting roasted?
Yeah, he was like a really good sport about it, for sure, yeah. Yeah.
Out of all the, you and Greg jammed on, how many together?
Oh, I don't know. It's hard to say. I've done 13 now, I think, but like he died after, his last one was David Hasselhoff.
Yes.
So I don't know how many have been since then.
Okay.
But I think I did like 6 with him, maybe, something like that.
And I think you would tell me before that, like, you guys would jam, just you guys.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize this until recently when I heard you talk about this, that you guys wouldn't even submit your shit until the day before, the day of the roast.
Yeah.
Because
you
didn't, and he wouldn't work them out. This blew my mind because you were saying Jeff Ross, who's a Roastmaster General, would go around and I would see him at the store and running his set. And you said Greg never, just the first time he did the jokes was the roast.
Yeah, he didn't want anybody, like it's a different style. Like, you know, like that works for Jeff and that's great. He can tweak them and whatever else. And also, that's his entire, like that's his brand. You know what I mean? So like, people feel like they're getting to see
1,000%
like a peek behind the curtain when Jeff does that.
Yes.
So it's cool. But like, yeah, Greg like absolutely didn't want to burn any of the material in advance. So literally the first time he said it was into the microphone at the roast, like not even at rehearsal.
Wow.
Like at rehearsal, he would like do fake jokes because he didn't want to burn the actual material. Like he didn't want anybody seeing it. And so that was like fun for us. Like if we talked about this then already, but that was like really fun for us was the idea that like, that was because there was an entire staff like cranking away on jokes, and we were also the two of us tucked away cranking on jokes.
Yeah,
and like we never saw each other's until like the roast itself that day, and that was like super fun then to see like who cracked it. You know what I mean? Like who's the one who came up with the, you know, better Joan Rivers old, you know, dry vagina joke.
Yeah,
you know what
I mean?
Like so that was like really fun for that reason.
There's a confidence to that. There must be. I mean, to not do your shit until the day of, right? Of just like you guys just know that he's
the joke is that good to
hit on day of without running it anywhere?
Yeah, because he didn't
making
what,
you
like,
guys laugh or what?
Oh yeah. I mean, like at a point you kinda know. Like you do know, like with stand-up, it's kind of up in the air. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? You have to kind of do it in front of a crowd to know. But with roast jokes, they're like surgical. You know what I mean? It's like they're so precise and specific that like you have like, you know, like kind of sharpened it like a samurai sword to the point where it's like you could look at it on a page and go like, this is absolutely a gem. Like this will work. Like you don't need to try it out in advance, like to get a laugh, to find out if you need to tweak it anymore. Like it's...
So you guys
it's
wouldn't
dumb.
Have, you guys didn't need each other to like gauge if something was like.
Well, the two of us, I guess, like the two of us, if
you
made
each
the two
audience,
of us laugh,
yeah.
then it was like finished.
Right.
Then we knew it was a good joke, you know? So.
So crazy to, so the Trump one you guys did.
No, that was the first one.
Was that
he,
after? Oh, that was the first one.
That was
after.
Very, that was like extra sad for me. Cause that was the first one that Greg had died and I was like a, you know, just kind of off on my own.
Oh, man.
And they just basically, like, you know, just folded me into the writing staff for that one. So that was the first one that I didn't have a Greg to write for. And then on top of it, it was Donald Trump, who was just like an absolute piece of shit the whole way. Like,
he was.
At the time. Yeah. I mean, like, yeah. It, like, you know, I'm not, this is that. Not me, like, rewriting reverse engineering history. Like, you will find, like, articles of quotes of me talking about what a diabolical bag of dicks he was back in 2015, how he handled his roast.
Wow.
Like, he sucked. Like,
no part, if somebody had told you during that experience, hey, this guy's gonna be president someday.
No, that was like a joke. Like, we kept making that joke, you know, like that he would run for president. But like, it's the only thing that's disappointing to me is that, like, the sort of like immense volume of shit that we know about him now, we didn't at the time. You
gotcha.
Know what I mean? Like,
gotcha.
Like, there was no, you know, porn star payoff, and, you know, like, there was none of that stuff. Like,
dude,
that would have been great.
You're just going off
to
with,
have
yeah,
at
totally.
The roast. It was just mostly just like he's an impotent, you know, fat pretend billionaire. But actually, you couldn't even do those jokes. About him not being rich.
Why? Because, like, he would say...
Because that was his one thing, which was so absurd. Was like, everybody gets a thing that they get to say, like, that's kind of like off limits, you know what I mean? And it's always reasonable. You know, it's always like, don't make fun of my children or whatever, you know what I mean? Or like,
so everyone, roast person getting
they
roasted...
They usually will say, like, they'll have a couple things that are off limits, you know? Like, and that's fair, you know? Like, and it's never something that would make you go, like, come on, don't be a...
If the mom passed of AIDS...
Right, or whatever. Yeah, it's like, I'm real sensitive about my mom. Like, just let's not do that. Or whatever it is. You know, like Bob Saget was like, don't make fun of the Olsen twins. It was like, okay, yeah, that's a reasonable thing to ask. You know what I mean? Like, it's not their roast.
I feel like
it
happened anyway, didn't it?
It did, but still, like, it was a good rule of thumb to, like, don't smash them.
Right, okay.
You know what I mean? Like, so, and he was good-natured about it and all that stuff.
Right,
But yeah, Trump's only thing was, don't say I'm not as rich as I am. Like, that was literally his thing. Like, you cannot undervalue my... net worth or properties or whatever. So,
but my family, you can say they're all pieces of shit.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But don't undermine my value.
Yeah. Don't, like, undervalue what I'm worth. Like, that was, like, his whole thing. And he would, like, I mean, I've talked about this, but like, he really, like, he would actively, like, jack up the numbers in his script for stuff. Like there was, like, he literally is like, they you could see, like, there's some Huffington Post article or something that actually has, like, scanned in, like, a document from his like, rebuttal. That he, like, crossed out shit and changed numbers and stuff. There's this one joke about, it was, like, toward the end of his thing, that was something the effect of that you know, he is responsible for, like, all the world's problems, like bed bugs and scabies and, you know, like, herpes and whatever else. But, like, he's, like, he doesn't even live here. He's, like, a Earth's slumlord, essentially, right? So he, like, lives in a golden penthouse space station, like, Italian marble.
Right.
It's, like, it's beautiful. And then he starts, like, selling... You know, like, talking about the sort of amenities of his space station.
Right.
And he says that it was 50,000 foot square foot. And he changed that number to, like, 100,000. Like, he jacked up.
Fuck out of here.
He needed people to know that his fictitious space station was larger than it was, which is literally exactly what he is currently being indicted for, is over inflating the value of things.
That's, and very,
it's like,
illegal.
I know for sure he did that because I watched him do it with a fake space station. I watched him double the size of a fake space station that came out of our brains. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
but back then, it's very laughable. You're just like, this guy's such a cartoon character of a human being, right?
Yeah, but he wasn't, like, not in a good way. Like, I mean, yeah, like he was just a contemptible.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. That's why, like, any of these, like, you know, like, whatever, Casey Hutchinson or whoever, these, like, these people who come out, like, finally, and they write a book and they're like, oh, you know, like, you know, they, like, kind of see the light, and they, you know, former administration people.
Right.
It's like, how did you fucking not know? Like, I knew he was a piece of shit when I saw him in a Pizza Hut commercial in, like, 1984.
Even the way, like, he talked to Kevin McAllister in Home Alone 2.
Yeah, exactly. It was like I was like, this guy's not for me. He's a real douchebag.
Like, man.
Like, from, yeah, like Pizza Hut commercials, like, in the 80s. Like, how did you not get that sense?
Man, I saw him
this
on
guy's
a
scumbag.
I saw him on a late Tonight Show with Jay Leno once, and Dave Matthews and Scarlett Johansson were the guests. And Dave, like, made some comment about, like, he's like, if we flew in here late last night and, like, on a regular commercial jet, not on, like, Mr. Trump, hoping to get up to you, babe, like Mr. Trump. And Trump just, like, smiled and then turned out toward the crowd and went, like, and just was, like, waiting for an applause.
Right. Yeah.
For, like, that's right, I've got a big plan. Like,
yeah.
I mean, there's a level of just megalomania that's...
It's absurd. It's pathological.
Almost respectable to a certain degree. I mean, to me right now... This is the last thing I'll say about this guy. I mean, I don't know. Can't. But here's the thing. It's like Trump jokes, I feel like, at this point, it's like he's continuing to keep himself. You guys, you can't not talk about, because he's continuing to give material. And he's continuing to get on camera. And what I think now is, if you're looking at him and Biden comparatively, it's like Biden is old guy and Trump is like crazy old guy. Where it's like he's still, you know, if you're at a barbecue with a crazy old guy that's like, you know, I'm number one on Facebook.
Right.
Versus Joe just being like, you know, like it's, there's Fraggle Rock nearby, you know, like whatever it is.
Right.
It's just, the fact that Trump can be somewhat articulate and coherent is keeping him like, because it's all still bonkers. They're operating through the same guy turning the wheel for all their sentences in their brain works at the same factory.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's just, I mean, they're both like, like my kids are approximately that age gap that Donald Trump and Joe Biden are. They're both like, you know what I mean? Like on the, like they're just on the old end of it, but it's like both of my children, I don't trust, like they're both, they might as well be the same age. You know what I mean? Like there's very little development, improvement between 4 and 6, just like there is very little developmental de-evolution between 81 and 79. You know what I mean? Like they might as well be.
But then you look at Harrison Ford doing 15 Indiana Jones movies and you're like, fuck.
I guess. Yeah. I mean, whatever. Like, but he's not fucking president. Like he could go ahead, do whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, like there's always like a story about some grandma who runs the New York City Marathon. Like, good, fine. Go ahead, do that. Whatever. I don't care.
No, thanks.
Like, but like, I'm not going to, I don't want them to be president.
How do you guys deal with, I guess now coming out of the writer's strike and just, you know, and you guys are the best, dude. I mean, it's like your jokes, your monologue. I've told you this many a times, dude. Kimmel's the best with the monologue. Your bits, it's just, it's real smart, man. But also silly, playful. You span the gamut with giving the audience a variety of things to chew on.
Yeah, well, I'm a small part of it, but thanks. But that's the thing that I'm proud of about this show too, is that like comedy people always hands down are like, Kimmel's the one that I like.
You
know what I mean? So like if people who are also in that, you know what I mean? Like you would go, if you needed to get your toilet fixed, you would go with the guy that plumbers say is like, this guy's the plumber.
Oh yeah, man.
You know what I mean? So like, I think the fact that comedy people are like,
yeah,
you know, Kimmel's the one, like I'm proud to work on a show like that. You know,
how do you guys, you're jamming on the monologue too, right? With all how can you just break down like a day of jamming on that? Like you got, you guys came in, let's say Monday. I mean, like coming back from the strike. I mean, I'm assuming it's business as usual, right? You try to get back to your old habits, your old routines of like, I don't know, is there just a meeting, almost like the beginning of an SNL week? Everyone sits down and...
No, it doesn't work like that. But like, so like, this week was a weird example just for the fact that we didn't have a week prior.
Okay.
Like, so like, next week will be a good example, or this week is a good example,
okay,
right? Because we had last week, right? So like, so what, it, at 7 a.m., we get a packet in our... inbox that is, here's a bunch of the news stories, right, that somebody has called through, and there's a guy who has a terrible job that he has to start looking for news stories at like 4:30 in the morning or whatever.
Oh
right?
My God.
So that they get to us at 7, right? So then he sends them to us, and then we basically just write a bunch of jokes to those, and then like have to turn those in by 9 a.m. and then basically Jimmy will send us something back by 10 a.m. that's like he's called through that whole packet and has picked jokes, right? So, and then we get in, and there's a rehearsal, and then that's where we will see, like, bits that were taped the day before, or, like, you know, ones that are edited together, that kind of thing, you know? Or, and then we watch clips of, like, news clips of, like, you know, goofy shit that happened in the news, or, you know, clips of Trump, you know, misspeaking, and, you know, whatever, saying that he's running against Obama or whatever insane thing he's doing right now. You know, so like that kind of stuff. And we'll watch those. And then he picks those. And then after lunch, we like write jokes for all his clips. And then just other news will come in throughout the day and we'll work on those. And then there'll usually be like a 5 o'clock, like look ahead to the next, like coming up, whatever. We have Harrison Ford on the show, whatever it is. Like then like write bits for that coming up. Like, some sort of like forward thinking ideas for the next day, you know? And then we tape the show at 4:30 and we watch the monologue and then we go. So that's it. That's the day. So it's really like kind of like from about like, I'd say after you've like a little reprieve from 7 to 9, it's super busy because you're just trying to cram out as many jokes as you can. And then like starting at like 11, it's busy for the rest of the day. Like, so
how much is Jimmy? He's there for all the rehearsal and everything.
Yeah, sure.
And is it pretty much like a free for all? Like, just he's like, hey, throw anytime something, you know.
Well, I mean, you could shout shit if you want to, like in the rehearsal or whatever. But like, usually, at that point, we're like kind of like making notes about like, oh, this clip is funny. Maybe we could do something with this. And, you know, like that happened to me today in rehearsal. There was like a clip for something that I was like, oh, okay, this isn't a thing that's like, you can encapsulate the pitch in just me shouting it out.
Yeah.
I'm going to write it down and send it in later in the day, which I did. Gotcha. So in theory, if he picks it tonight, it could be something I work on tomorrow. Wow. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like that, that's how it works.
Do you guys discuss ever like, all right, we're, you know, no, like less Trump jokes this week or less jokes about, you know, something again, that's like a big story for a while, or is it really just day to day? Like
it is really day to day.
You have to treat each. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and then also like looking ahead to like the, you know, whatever the World Series is coming up. We're going to have, you know, like that kind of stuff, whatever.
Yeah.
So there's that kind of stuff always. And like, you know, just right now we're pitching like, you know, like Halloween ideas and stuff like that, you know, and which we probably would have done a few weeks ago had we not been on strike, you know? But so like, and I have a Christmas bit that I just pitched that we couldn't do for like 3 years because of COVID, but we're going to try to do it this time around.
Yeah.
It's like a sketch thing that we just weren't able to do because it requires a lot of people and we couldn't have them, you know? Yeah. So I'm getting started to work on that.
Awesome.
So like that kind of shit. So there is like forward thinking stuff, but the rest of it is like very day to day, you know, trying to get it done like by 4 PM, you know?
God damn.
So yeah.
Will the fake parents ate the candy thing make a return?
Oh yeah.
It is.
You know what? I assume it would, but again, maybe there wasn't time to get the call out because of the strike. Like if it weren't for the strike, surely there would be. But
oh, there's gotta be time, right?
Oh wait, yeah. Oh wait, what am I talking about? It's supposed to be. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. So yes, in theory, I assume because it's that night that it happens on Halloween.
And then it's the next day, right? Yeah.
Right. Okay, yeah. Like usually it's one of those, like I was thinking like those viewer bits where people have to send shit in.
Yeah.
But that is like contingent on it happening Halloween night. So there is still time.
What do you think about those? So it's always funny when there's some people that comment like, this is so mean. And why
yeah, no, I think it's hilarious. Like having kids, like I think that's great. Like I wouldn't do it to my own children. Like, because I'm not a fucking monster. Like, I'm not a total asshole. I mean, like, why would I do that to my kids?
Some of the parents are just maniacally laughing as the kid
like,
is sobbing.
I don't know what was wrong with the parents that do it, but I think it's hilarious and delightful.
It's fun to watch.
It's fun to watch. Yeah, it's like, it's fun to watch kids, like, fall down or whatever. Like, it's funny.
Wait, how
it's
about
my own?
How about the stuff that, do you chime in on the stuff, like, that Jimmy's gotten, you know, famous for these monologues about the healthcare system or?
Yeah, he's cool about that. Like on days where there's something, like, serious or dramatic or whatever, like they'll really just like, you know, like just send your thoughts, like your legitimate thoughts on the issue, you know what I mean? Like, so it's not, you're not like trying to go for jokes, you know, like after a shooting or whatever, like that kind of thing, but it's just like, you know, like whatever, just like an open forum to, and you send that kind of stuff in, and like, you know, sometimes he may like, oh, I like that sentiment or whatever, but like, you know, for the most part it's him doing that, you know, like, because you're not gonna put words in his mouth when it's like a serious issue necessarily, but like, but you know, I mean, I'm like on the, like on a sillier note, like I'm on the sort of a radicalized moron QAnon desk, you know, like that's kind of my territory, is like anti-vaxxers and dipshits like that. So like a lot of times, like I'll find some fucking con man who, like some whatever dipshit chiropractor who is like saying that, you know, the vaccines cause pregnant women to, you know, have miscarriages or whatever stupid shit like that. And I'll go like, you know, like I think that this moron should be talked about, you know what I mean? And I'll you know, like that. And I'll write up a whole funny chunk about it. Like that kind of thing. So, and then that, so like, you know, whatever, but like,
what about like going after, go ahead.
No. So it's like, there are times where you do feel like you're like it was, and I felt the void when I was on strike to like not have that outlet. Cause like, you know, there are plenty of times where it's like, they'll do somebody will do something infuriating, and then you make fun of Ted Cruz and call him a gelatinous butt worm or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then that ends up on like, and then he gets mad at it, and you get to see the repercussion. Like you get to see.
Yeah.
Like I had something a couple years that like Fox News was like a whole weekend of them griping about. Like they were so like, can you believe that, you know, Tucker Carlson's like, can you believe that what he said, you know, about you people? You know what I mean? Like, that's what he thinks about it. Like, whatever, like that kind of thing. It was like, oh, yeah, that was my idea. You
know? Wow, that's
so it's
cool.
Fun to see that happen,
fuck,
you know?
Yeah.
Like, so, yeah, that's exciting.
There's There's a new one now with Aaron Rodgers that I feel like is pretty fun that he's going after my boy Travis Kelce for being, what does he call him, Mr. Pfizer, I think?
Oh, right. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Which is just like, it's so funny because, A, I'm like, oh, you're so not cool, Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah.
And this is aside from any sort of vax talk, whatever.
Right.
You're just clearly a boring guy.
Yeah.
And Travis Kelce is so cool. And yeah. I've smoked weed with him.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And I don't, and Aaron Rodgers is in the woods doing ayahuasca, which is cool. But it's cooler to smoke weed and walk around your city and take pictures with people at the gas station.
Sure.
Which is not what Travis and I set out to do that day, but it happened by...
I think if you're a famous NFL player, that's cool. I think there's a lot of people that smoke weed and go take pictures of people at the gas station.
Yeah.
That's not, I think that's, like,
you're a man of the
people. There's a piece missing where that's like not like, fuck yeah, I want to be like that guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, so, totally.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it is... I mean, to each his own. To go hard in the paint on stuff like that, I guess, as... I mean, the same way, I guess, he's entitled the same way if... I mean, if, you know, Travis is going to do those commercials, that Rodgers does do that. But sometimes, I guess, when the question isn't being asked about... Like, I think he was asked something about Kelce and Taylor Swift, and then he just made a little jab.
Yeah.
Which is just, you know...
Well, yeah, I mean, like...
But he also said that dolphins fucking have healing powers.
Yeah, yeah, he seems like not a well-read guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Which to me feels ripe for, but also, you know, sometimes athletes like that, you're just like, oh, maybe you wouldn't even get the, it's almost a waste of a joke.
Yeah.
Because you maybe, it's partly you're doing that in hopes that the person, like you said, does get wind of it.
Yeah, it's like, whatever, he can be a dipshit like that. Like, there's like plenty of like, you know, whatever, there's the, you know, what is it, what's his name? Irving, the Kyrie
Irving,
he's the one who's like the flat earther or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, whatever. There's like those guys are. They're just. I didn't expect them to be particularly smart guys.
Totally.
Like Aaron Rodgers or whoever. You know, like so. But they're not like making money off that. Like the people that bother me are like the people like the anti-vax doctors or whatever.
Oh, right,
like those people who then like sell some like colloidal silver supplement or some bullshit like that. You know, like or they'll sell like those like buckets of freeze-dried food that'll last for 100 years when the 5G zombie apocalypse happens. You know what I mean? Like that kind of thing. Like those guys, fuck them, because they're the ones like. And then like Aaron Rodgers will watch one of those videos and go like, oh, that makes a lot of sense, you know. And then he'll just regurgitate the stupid shit. But like he's not profiting from it. Like the guys who are the problem are the ones who are like
cashing in.
Who the whatever podcast Aaron Rodgers listens to, they're the ones who are the problem.
Totally.
You know, like that kind of thing.
Hey guys, Adam Ray for the About Last Night podcast, and this show is sponsored by BetterHelp. I got a question for you. Do you feel like your brain, your brain, the thing in your head that makes you think, talk, breathe, cum, fart, and fall asleep during a bad story, that it's getting in its own way? I know I do. Being a comedian on the road, sometimes I'm just not getting the proper rest, or my brain is taking a vacay, and I'm trying to get back on track. Well, you know what you should do? You know what's good for you, but you just can't do it? Therapy. Therapy. It helps you figure out what's holding you back, and I've been fucking with BetterHelp because I'm trying to get to the bottom of what's holding me back, whether I know it or not. And you can work on yourself too, instead of against yourself. Aww, that's so cute. If you're thinking of starting therapy, look, give BetterHelp a try. It truly is the way to take a deeper look and decide what's going on, which we all should do. You got to get introspective, reflective, all the actives. And it's all online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you got to do is fill out a brief questionnaire so they can get to know who you are and who you could get matched with, who will be a licensed therapist. And you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge if you don't like them, the way they look, smell. Look, make your brain your friend with BetterHelp. And right now, you can go to BetterHelp.com/aboutlastnight and get 10% off your first month, because shit ain't cheap. So go to BetterHelp.com/aboutlastnight today. Get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/aboutlastnight. This book.
Yeah.
Give me the title.
Oh, sure. It's Killing the Guys Who Killed the Guy Who Killed Lincoln. A nutty story about Edwin Booth and Boston Corbett. So it's a good
available everywhere you can get books.
It is not available anywhere you can get books. It's exclusive to Scribd, right? So
ooh.
Do you know what Scribd is?
No.
All right, think of it like Netflix for books, right?
Awesome.
So it is a subscription service that has millions of ebooks and audiobooks.
Cool.
And you just subscribe to the service, and then you have unlimited access to like all these books. And so similarly to Netflix, they just have like a big library of stuff, but then also they do originals, right? So mine is a Scribd original, yeah, right? Where they are like starting to do like original content.
Fuck yeah.
Where, so they're like giving, you know, like, so, and there's big names that like Stephen King does Scribd originals, and like Margaret Atwood, who did, what's it called? Handmaid's Tale.
Yes.
Like, you know, whatever. Like, so they're like big name authors that do it too. And then they also just like take a shot and give a book deal to somebody who's never had a book before. And they were like looking to fill something in a comedy history space. Like, do you anybody know anybody who does comedy history? And my manager was like, yeah, I know exactly the fucking goofy history dork who is like is a comedy history nerd. So then I just pitched them this idea and they bit and gave me a book deal.
And so what did you pitch them that ultimately got?
So this is essentially a story about two very peculiar guys on either side of John Wilkes Booth, who was the assassin of Abraham Lincoln. So this is like essentially really, it's a story about the Lincoln assassination, but not about the Lincoln assassination itself. It's about these two kind of weirdos on the periphery.
I'd watch a full movie of this, by the way.
Did you? Oh, yeah. Oh, thanks. Like,
oh, in
people
a heartbeat.
Have said that, like, that's been flattering that people are like, oh, you should turn this into something. So
I think that's a good sign.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah.
It's just a funny take to take some historical event and be like, what about, like, the other shit that was going on around that you're not thinking about. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, I don't know. Do you know who, it's about two guys. And so, do you know who, first of all, do you know who Edwin Booth was or is?
That sounds familiar.
Okay. Well, you're a professional actor. You should know. So, Edwin Booth was.
Yeah, I played Jay Leno and Vince McMahon. So that's the extent of my historical figures that I've, I'm privy to.
No. The strip club DJ at the Chippendales, right? There was a real man.
Yeah.
I'm sure you watched a lot of original tape and whatever of that guy.
I did, yeah.
Oh, you did? I was fucking with you. But no, you actually did. There was a real guy.
Yes, that he's based off of. Yes.
Oh, okay.
That's a real guy.
Yeah, so see, you have a lot of historical, important historical figures.
I'm never going to play. That's how much, by
Dr.
the way,
Phil?
How
he's
great
a...
my character is going, or my career. People were just like, hey, if it could just not be you, it'd be great.
You're like the Daniel Day-Lewis of like dumb, shitty, inconsequential people in history. You know, because like he always plays historical figures, but they tend to be very important, and you're going to do all the dumb ones.
Hey, I played Ron Ziegler on Gaslit, Nixon's press secretary.
There you go. He was a dumbass. Like, that's good. Like, that's what I'm saying. You play all the dipshits in history.
Holy shit. All right, so Edwin Booth is
Edwin
who?
Booth
I'll play
was,
him at some point. Educate me.
He was John Wilkes Booth's way more famous brother, like,
for
at
what?
The time. Actor. Like, so John Wilkes Booth came from a very famous acting family, right? And John Wilkes Booth was the shittiest one. Like, he was like the fat Baldwin of the Booth family, right? Or more, but that's not even that, because they had a famous dad, right? Their dad, John Wilkes Booth's dad, was super famous. His name was Junius Brutus Booth, and he was the most famous actor in the world. Mm. Like, he's from England, and he was famous in England, and then he came over here. He was like the first international celebrity actor, right? And then, he had a family, and they all became actors, like all the kids, right? And Edwin was like the standout. So it's kind of like the dynamic a little bit is, and the thing is that it's like Southern sort of revisionist history that like John Wilkes Booth was a famous actor. Like, John Wilkes Booth fucking sucked. Like, he was like a hanger-on, open micer, wannabe nobody, dipshit guy who happened to be like the handsome one, right? So he was like the dumb boy band good-looking of the, but like nobody respected John as an actor, right? Like, but Edwin was like the fucking guy. So it's kind of like a little bit like Kirk Douglas and Michael Douglas and Eric Douglas, you know what I mean? So it's like that dynamic.
Wow.
You know? So Edwin then becomes the most famous man in America. Like, he's like the number one actor. And like, you know, I don't know, like, well, you're an actor. It's like hard to quantify acting, but I think this is like a funny like anecdote. Like, he was apparently so good at acting that like people would shoot at him a lot. Like, because he would play, like, Iago in Othello. Like, he played villains a lot.
Right.
And when he would play villains, they would get so mad, they'd fucking start shooting at him. Because he's like, we got to get this guy.
Holy shit. Right? People like, couldn't differentiate between screen and real life.
Well, not even screen, but stage. Like, because this was pre, this
was
like the
1850s
or whatever.
Yes. Okay.
So then he, but he was like that. Like, the way that it's described, he was the theatrical 19th century Brando, right? Like, he, like, changed the game, right?
Gotcha.
Like, before Edwin came along, like, even his dad, who was really famous, and, like, the other famous actors of the day in, like, the 1830s and 40s or whatever, like, they would just, like, bloviate Shakespeare, you know, just like, it's better to, you know, the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, you know, and they would, like, mime firing an arrow when they got to that part, right? Because people are dumb, and they would, like, mime it, basically, right? But then Edwin was, like, I think we should give people more credit than that. And so he would, like, you know, just kind of mope around as Hamlet instead of like, you know, like, you know, like
my brother.
You know, like he would like just kind of emote, like, you know, like do it with eyes and stuff, like
wow.
the way like Brando did, right?
Yes.
And so that's why like he like fucking like people were like blown away when they saw him on stage. So like Edwin was huge, and then John was just this wannabe kind of hanger on dude, and he wanted to get in the family business. And like even the whole family was like, yeah, John's not very good. Like there's like written, like, you know, his sister Asia said that, and like Edwin said that to their other brother, was like, I don't know.
So he
about
tried.
John. Yeah, so John really wanted to, and they were like, get the fuck, you know, like, but he wouldn't be dissuaded because he was like crazy, right? He was like a megalomaniac. And so Edwin came up with this plan, was like, all right, here's what we're gonna do. I'm gonna do all the like cool northern cities like Philadelphia and Boston and Chicago and New York. And then you have to like stay south of the, basically the Mason-Dixon line. Like you can perform anywhere like Alabama and Georgia, like these like small little towns
yeah.
and whatever. Right. And so basically like he banished John to only performing in the South, like in the early 1850s, like in the lead up to the Civil War. So basically like John got kind of radicalized down there because he would do these shows like in like barns in Mobile, Alabama. And then the only people to talk to after the show were just people who like hated the North and, you know, like that
oh
kind of thing.
God.
And they were like, you know, like they're just trying to tell us what to do and keep us down or whatever. And he was like, yeah, there's a guy, I know a guy like that up there who did the same thing to me.
Oh
like,
my
and so,
God.
So I'm not blaming Edwin necessarily, but it's a little bit his fault. You know what I mean? Like, so he like kind of sent this like emotionally fragile, dumb guy to the South, like right in the lead up to the Civil War. And then he just basically got like radicalized by Confederates. So, and then after John kills Lincoln, like Edwin's career is like fucked, and he's like, yeah, and so he like sends a like writes a, like a letter to the New York Times, like quitting acting or whatever.
Wow,
and yeah, and then that lasted because you know actors like for like 6 months, and he was like, I'm back, everybody, right? And then
yeah, of course,
yeah, and then like
so
whatever
like,
he.
So that'd be like if Alec Baldwin. If let's say Stephen Baldwin,
were you gonna say
was
if Alec Baldwin killed a guy?
I was gonna say if Stephen Baldwin did that, and then Alec had to quit.
Yeah, but except Alec is not that big. You
gotcha.
Know what I mean? Like it's like yeah, like if Brad Pitt's, you know what I
gotcha.
Mean? Like brother
Alan Pitt.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
Wait.
So
that's what, fucking crazy.
And so then, like for the rest of his career, just kind of like dogged him and stuff. Like he did end up like. Still having a career in acting and whatever, you know, and
but he was doing like Disney, like Pets Play Sports
no, like,
movies.
No, actually, what is interesting, like he ended up doing okay, but it was like always like everybody was weird around him for the rest of his life, and like there was like this rule like you couldn't bring up Lincoln or his brother around him and that kind of shit, and he would just like step on rakes all the time, you know, like there's this one, I guess so. There's a statue in Chicago of Lincoln, and in order to raise money for that statue in like the 1870s or whatever, they would sell these like, you know how a death mask is?
Yeah.
Like, right? They did that with his hands, right? So like a lot of people, like they would sell these like sculptures that were like Lincoln's dead hands,
yeah.
right? And people had them in their house, right? Like a lot of people bought those, and then the money for those went to, it was like a cast of Lincoln's hands, went to build this statue. And so, you know, Edwin's like seeing these all over the place. And like he goes to some party one night. He's like, what are these? I've been seeing these everywhere. And everyone's like, oh, fuck. Like, Lincoln's hands. And then he's like, ah, yeah, sure, fuck. And he like bails on the party. And like, you know what I mean? Like that was like the way it always worked
yeah.
with him. Like that you couldn't talk about it. Like, and he was just all, and he was just always writing about
sensitive.
How John fucked him, you know, like that kind of thing. You know,
couldn't let it
so,
go.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway.
Do
so
we know why John wanted to kill Lincoln? Was it just he just got,
well, like I said, I mean he got radicalized first
yeah.
of all, and then yeah he was like really like the rest of the family was abolitionist, but he was like really like pro-slavery and whatever else
wow.
and also he was like
nuts,
like a fame maniac, you know what I mean, and, like he wanted to be famous really badly
oh.
and it wasn't working out, like acting, like whatever, like this was just a shortcut, you know, like that kind of shit, you
yeah.
know. So but like I mean he was like he definitely like, and he was like a stupid guy, so he got like radicalized by the South and told
yeah.
that was a good, you
right.
know, whatever. So, but then the South secedes and they lose the war.
Right.
And then 5 days later, he goes and kills Lincoln. And everybody's like, well, what the fuck did you do that for? Like, even the South were like, well, it's over. What do you, come
oh,
on, man.
Man.
So, yeah.
Still wanted his 50 minutes of fame.
Yeah, right.
Okay,
exactly.
So the book
so,
then.
So then, sorry.
Yeah, please, take your time.
So then that's Edwin. So the other character in the book is like probably my favorite, like 19th century man. Like, he's just a incredible lunatic. He's like he's like 1800s Mike Lindell. Like he's this
oh
goofy
my
like my pillow dipshit. His name is Boston. Yeah. Right. Exactly. He's such a lovable goof.
Yeah,
right.
Dude.
So he is he was a hatter who he made hats, right? And then that made him crazy, right? Like, you've heard the term mad as a hatter, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's like a real thing. That would happen to hatters. Do you know about that?
Mm.
So, like, the Mad Hatter from Alice in Wonderland?
Yeah.
They used to make hats by, like, boiling them in liquid mercury. And then what would happen is they would just sit there and breathe in mercury vapor all day. And mercury nitrate makes you fucking crazy. It puts holes in your brain. And so hatters would just do that all the time. And it took them, like, years to put that together. It was like Lewis Carroll, the guy who wrote Alice in Wonderland, was like one of the first people to like make that connection, and everybody thought it was fascinating and like hilarious.
Wow.
Cause like at the time it was like a great joke. Cause it was like, oh yeah, you're right. Like, cause it was like, people would be like, hey, is the guy who makes your hats also fucking crazy as shit? And it was like, yeah, yeah, they're all fucking. So anyway, so he was a hat maker who went crazy, and then he was an alcoholic. He lost his job and he became a street preacher, and he was like preaching on the street, and he like went like, he was impersonating Jesus. He became like a real like hardcore Jesus goof. And then one night two prostitutes came up and talked to him, and he got really horny and he got really mad about it, and he got upset at himself for being horny, and he went back to his apartment and he read that part of the Bible that says if your eye offends you, you should cut it off, or if your hand's bugging, like keeping you from straying from God, you should cut it off. And he took a pair of scissors and he cut his balls off with a pair of scissors. So he castrated himself with scissors, and then he didn't even go to the hospital. He just like fucking walked around the city for a while, and he went to church. And he was at church, and they were like, hey, man, your dick's bleeding a lot. You should probably go to the hospital. And so then they sent him to the hospital, and he almost died there. And then he got out, and the Civil War started. And then he immediately joins, right, this ball-less goofball.
Yeah, you don't get your balls back once you cut them off, do you?
They're just gone. No, uh-uh. And, yeah, there's actually a really graphic medical description. It's in the book that the doctors at the Boston Medical University or whatever, like, it's pretty gory what happened to his dick, but hilarious. And, So
is that funny? Even if it's like a horrendous dick related event, it's still dick related.
Oh, there's a really good Edwin dick related story too. He had the clap, right?
Yeah.
And the way they used to treat that back in the day was they would put it on a table and they would smash it with a book, right? And so he had like a flattened dick because his dick, and the biggest book at the time, by the way, was the Bible. So like that is the most compelling connection between these two guys, is both of them had their dick disfigured by the Bible. So anyway, so Boston Corbett joins the Union Army and becomes like a super soldier, right? And he like is you know, kind of the bravest dude in his unit and whatever else. And he's also like super crazy, and he like doesn't respect authority, and he gets kicked out of the army like three times, and then just immediately like just kind of goes through the like just signs back up again somewhere else. And then like he ends up, Lincoln gets killed. He's the first guy to volunteer, and he chases John Wilkes Booth to a barn after 12 days, and he fucking, they're supposed to arrest John Wilkes Booth because they want a big trial, and God talks to Boston and tells him you should probably kill him, and so Boston shoots John Wilkes Booth in the head. So that's what happened to John Wilkes Booth, is this guy, Boston Corbett, this ball-less eunuch, Mad Hatter, is
stepped
the one
up.
Who, yeah.
People went nuts when John got shot. Yeah, was it like a
So then, so it was like they arrest Boston because it's like he's now in trouble,
yeah,
right? Because they're supposed to, and they bring him back to D.C. and it's like the Super Bowl parade, right? Like everybody is like, there he is, and like everybody's super excited about Boston Corbett. And overnight, he becomes the most famous man in America. Like right at the exact same time when Edwin is no longer. Like he's like hiding in his mansion.
Yeah.
Like Boston Corbett becomes the most famous dude, and he gets his picture taken by Matthew Brady, who's like the guy who took every Civil War picture. Like $5 bills with Lincoln's face.
Yeah.
Matthew Brady took that picture.
Wow.
And that's like what it's based on. And like he took everybody. So he makes like a baseball card of Boston Corbett, and it gets passed around by everybody, and like becomes like a collector's item and shit. And then he starts going on tour and doing like theaters, like reenacting the killing of John Wilkes Booth. But he's crazy and he's impossible to listen to because he's out of his mind. And so, like, it always says, like, anytime you read, like, an old newspaper that talks about his show, they're always like, you know, like, everyone asks for their money back or whatever, you know, like, because he was really like,
it was like the Charlie Sheen tour. I'm
That's a lot what it's like. Yeah, it was like the Charlie Sheen.
Or
it'd
be
Sheen.
Like if the guy who killed Bin Laden did a one man show about what it was like.
That's a lot what it's like. Yes, exactly. That's
and I would
like.
Watch the fuck out of that, by
yeah.
the way.
And so, yeah, so he went on tour for that, like, doing that shit. And then eventually he ended up, like, getting crazier because he like mercury poisoning gets worse
sure.
as you get, and so this like conspiracy theory started up like a QAnon kind of thing that was that John wasn't really dead and that Boston killed the wrong guy, and he got really mad about it. He pulled guns on anybody who said that, but
oh,
then
God.
Eventually he started to believe it. Right? He was like, oh, maybe maybe they're onto something. And then somebody sent him as like a goof, like a prank, like some just, you know, like troll from the 1800s, 1800s, sent him a like a death threat signed by John Wilkes Booth, like, I'm coming to get you or whatever. And so then Boston is like, holy fuck.
No way to fact check.
The guy who I killed is really mad that I killed him, and he's coming for me, right? Like, that's the right, because he's,
yeah, dude.
So he takes off and like goes running, and he ends up in Kansas and digs a gigantic hole in the ground, and then lives in the hole with two guns pointed at the opening of the hole for like a decade, right? Like, that's, and then he ends up taking the Kansas State House hostage one night, and then goes to an insane asylum, and then he busts out. Like, it's a crazy story. So like, that's Boston Corbett is a fascinating fucking.
So all ball. This is in the book.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like the lives of those two guys.
Holy so, shit,
yeah.
Dude.
Yeah. It's pretty interesting.
Bro, so. Great pitch.
Oh, thanks.
I'm so fired up to read it. The last book I think I read is Where the Sidewalk Ends by Shel Silverstein.
That's a while ago, I think.
It's a while
I mean,
ago.
You could have read it at any stage in your life, but
yeah, it knows.
You should have read it as a small child. So.
Yeah. How, bravo, by the way.
Oh, thanks.
To write a book is no small feat.
Yeah, well, thank you.
And
well, I had time off. So.
Yeah, but still, man, even making good on your time off is challenging. Okay, so people should go to...
So you can go to Scribd. So here's... Oh, yeah, if you want to get it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I have a code. You just go try.scribd. Scribd is spelled S-C-R-I-B-D. Try.scribd.com/Jesse Joyce, and you get a free 2-month subscription to check it out.
Wow.
So then you can just check out the book, and then you can cancel it and not have to pay anything.
Done
right?
And done. We'll put all that
I have... It's an audiobook, too, so I read the audiobook.
I was just going to ask, because I'm a big audiobook guy.
Okay, yeah. Okay. So you can you listen to the audiobook. Yeah.
And what's even better about having somebody who, you know, is a professional talker that, like, you know, that should, you know, translate over to...
Have you ever, as an actor, have you ever done an audiobook?
I'm dying to. Never have.
It's so fucking hard.
Yeah.
Like, I thought what you're saying is like, well, you're a professional talker. You've done this for years. No. You're an, I thought that'd be the easy part. Like, I thought writing the book would be very hard. And that was actually super fun for me. And I like basically cooked through like a chapter a day kind of thing is how I kind of did it.
Wow.
But then when it came to the audiobook, I was like, crack, this will be no problem. And then it was just like every third sentence I fucked up.
Yeah.
And there's all these like, there's like two like different narcs in your ears that are always like, you missed a word or you didn't, you know, and it's like, it makes you question whether or not you're even literate.
Totally.
You know what I mean? It's like, I wrote this. Like, I should be able to read it.
Yeah. You want the appropriate amount of emotion behind each sentence. And
it's so hard to read a book into a microphone. So,
wow.
Anyway. But I guess did it on time. It took 2 days.
Good.
But yeah, so.
The writing of the book, did you have to, so you said you wrote a chapter a day?
Once I got, it was the research that took forever, right? Yeah. Like, so that was the part that, once I, then I like outlined it all. And then once I had that, it was like, okay, I know what I want to have happen in this chapter. And then it just like, I told, it's the book kind of reads a little bit like Drunk History.
Cool.
But from a sober guy for 18 years, you know? So it's kind of just me telling the story in a way. It's kind of like I did, but you know, it's far more comprehensive and with sharper jokes.
Yeah.
But the research, like, it was just like, I literally was just going through the Library of Congress and like reading newspapers from like the 1860s and whatever, like that kind of thing a lot. So yeah, it was, and then like there's old books that you can, there's old books on Scribd too. Like I use Scribd to actually like find some books that went out of print in like 1911 that were written by a guy who knew Boston Corbett, like that kind of thing. So
Can you over or under research? Like, when do you get to a point where you're
No, not for me. Like, I feel like there's a lot. Like, I feel like everybody has a different style. But even just with jokes, like, on the show, I spend half that 7 to 9 time.
Yeah.
I spend the first hour, like, doing my own research makes me sound like an anti-vax dipshit. But in this context, I don't just trust the little packet that was sent. Like, I want to find the angle that nobody else has, you know?
Yes.
So, like, I will always, like, for the roast, too, like, I read David Hasselhoff's dumb book. Like, not the whole thing, but I read enough of it to get a sense that I was like, oh, here's a couple nuggets.
What was his book?
I don't know, whatever. I don't even remember what it was called.
Burgers Off the Floor?
Yeah. I didn't remember what it was called, but it was just, like, whatever. Like, his triumph from, you know, Knight Rider to singing on the Berlin Wall or whatever the fuck. It was that kind of thing. So, but you know, there's whatever goofy. So like I always feel like if I know everything about the thing, then I can make a ton of jokes about it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's kind of how I approached it. So I researched it for like months and then, so.
I want to pitch you a book idea.
Okay, sure.
From a fictional character standpoint. Although I thought he was fictional, but he's a real guy.
Oh, okay. I like books about
Chef
real guys.
Chef Boyardee. Uh-huh. How much do you know about him?
I know there's a statue of him in like Minneapolis or somewhere like that, isn't there?
Wow.
Do you know about that?
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So
like,
Minneapolis
he's a real man.
Is claiming Prince? Kirby
it
Puckett.
It might not be Minneapolis.
And Chef Boyardee.
But if you just Google the Chef Boyardee statue, there's a statue of him somewhere that people go and, you know, take goofy Instagram photos with. But no, I don't know. He's probably Polish or something, right? And they just gave him an Italian whatever.
Like, he is a real chef.
Yeah.
That really came, that had like,
invented,
but there's
canned
there's so
stew.
Yeah, there's yeah. Beefaroni.
Right.
What was his beefaroni and I think just the ravioli, whatever.
Yeah.
SpaghettiOs.
Yeah.
There's enough out, there's like maybe two paragraphs on Wikipedia.
Okay.
And I did a couple days worth of like really scouring, nothing, to where I'm like, oh, the comedic liberties you could take to flesh out the rest
right.
of this story
sure.
feels
okay.
Just endless.
You know, I bet. I feel like, I don't, just without, that he probably had the same sort of, that chefs at the time probably felt about him the same way that chefs now feel about Guy Fieri. You
sure.
know what I mean? Like, it's probably that kind of vibe.
Sure.
You know, where there was a lot of pretentious, you know, like Italian chefs who were like, you know,
totally
round spaghetti in a can. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Maybe he sold out, right?
A billionaire. You know
yeah.
what I mean? Yeah. So.
I think there had to have been a point. I mean, are you, what types of people, I guess, interest you to not only like write about, but to like talk about, to even enjoy? You said you're a history buff, right?
Yeah.
So like, I guess throughout time, even now, let me phrase a question for now. Like in the present day, like, are there certain people that you're like, wow, I've been following? Let's say like Bill Clinton, for example. Did you know about him before he was in office and all that? Are there people like that that you've been following for a while that you're like, wow, to see the full trajectory and like forward progress and backward, you know?
No, I wouldn't say that necessarily. But like I mean, I've followed Mike Lindell's trajectory since day one. Like,
yeah.
like we do bits about him on the show
oh, yeah.
with James Adomian, you know?
Brilliant.
And like, it's always Brian Cook and I who write those bits.
The last one was so good, by the way.
The one just the other day?
Yes.
Oh, okay, thanks. Yeah, yeah. So that's always just me and Brian Cook.
Brilliant.
And actually, that one had, there's another guy, Keaton Patty, who helped us with it too. But yeah, they are so much fun to write, because it's just, you just really just write the most absurd. That's why I also like enjoy that Boston Corbett character, because he's just so fucking crazy
yeah.
that it's really fascinating.
Those are the best characters.
Yeah.
And even I have some of that fun with doing Dr. Phil, because
yeah.
there's a filter.
Yeah, he has like an absurd
yeah.
way that he talks.
He can say, and Trump is in the same boat. Where,
yeah.
But with Phil and Lindell, it's like these guys are a little bit more like, they're just, I think, a little more sane at this point, clearly. So when they're, at least they come off a little more like, Trump is just all over the place. But Lindell, you can tell, still truly is trying to push
well,
his
yeah.
products on you, but it's just so aloof to like the timing.
Well, yeah,
of,
he's just like the election denier world Charlie Brown. You know what I mean? Like
yeah.
he's just constantly
yeah.
getting the football yanked. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and it's just so adorable. You know
and
what I mean?
His
like
voice.
And you know, because I feel like every other one of those motherfuckers is just a straight up grifter. You know what I mean? Like
oh, yeah.
Steve Bannon knows he's lying to people.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Tucker Carlson, they all know they're
oh,
lying
yeah.
and they're just
beings.
Grifting,
yeah.
right? But Mike Lindell, at his core, really genuinely believes that, like, his toaster came alive and stole the election. You know what I mean? That, like, the Chinese somehow hacked his toaster
yeah.
and stole votes, and that Donald Trump is the rightful president. Like, he believes it at his core.
Yeah.
And that's why he's willing to, like, throw everything away
yeah.
for that. And, like, so there's something, like, kind of lovable
totally.
About that. I mean, he's very bad for America and
totally.
Very bad for democracy.
Thank God
and,
that we've all, like,
you know,
that it's been, like, that he's been, you know, not...
But I think that's why he works as a character. You know what
oh,
I mean? Because
that's
like,
a brilliant character.
Yeah.
And James' so. Portrayal is so fun.
Yeah. Oh, dude. He's the best. Yeah.
Would you ever want to do a full, I mean, because that's a great like sketch that there's, I mean, have you ever wanted to just do your own? How do you feel about sketch shows in general?
Well, I enjoy doing them on the show.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But like, I think that there, I've yet to see a sketch show that doesn't that doesn't fire at 66%.
That's what I was asking.
You know what I mean? So it's like 3 out of 5 are like, oh yeah, it's pretty good. You
because
know?
Why? Because
like,
of just the world
oh, I
we
just,
live in?
I don't know. I just think it's impossible to sustain. Like, I think you judge sketches one to the next. And you're like, well, that wasn't as good as the last one.
Totally.
You don't do that with jokes. You know what I mean? Like, you just listen. You are expecting the next joke and whatever. Like, so, and then if there's a sketch on our show, then like, oh, bonus, a sketch.
Yeah,
you know
yeah,
what I
yeah.
mean? But if it's like you're watching sketches, it's a 3-minute investment.
Right.
And it's like a lot of times it's just hammering the same joke and
right.
they have to have a great payoff. And then like, and then you watch the next one, you're like, oh, I don't know. I think I like that one better.
Right.
Or, you know, like whatever.
Yeah.
You're just judgy about it. I'm not sure. Nobody's ever asked me that before, but I think that's why it's like harder to sustain for an entire show. It's show around sketches, you know?
I truly feel bad for people that like don't, and I guess we're so deep into this world, but like people that, I don't want to say don't have a sense of humor, but that just miss the mark on like getting the joke, or the people that want to be a part of it, but clearly are just like their sensibilities don't line up with anybody's. I mean,
Donald Trump, like he thinks he's hilarious.
Right.
And he has enablers that make him, that he thinks he's like, they're like, oh, you're so funny. He's not like his like goofy nicknames. They're fucking lazy. They're like, they're incredibly dumb.
So hack.
And
yeah.
like, but he really, and like you go that Huffington Post article I keep bringing up, like you'll see like he has crossed out in his like trademark Sharpie punchlines and then like just added his own. And it's just like fucking, like there was one, this like really simple, stupid joke that was like about Seth MacFarlane. It was like, the only crowd you'll ever draw is with a pencil, right? Or whatever. It's a cute, like little, mind you, it has to be delivered through the fat mouth of Donald Trump. So it can't be like a real fucking crusher. Yeah. It's gotta, whatever. And he changed it to like, the only crowd you'll attract is flies or whatever. And it's like, well, now what is that? That's not even a joke. It's just where you say he's a piece of shit. And if you are, you've clunked it up in the, you know, like you've made it the clunkiest possible. So it's like that, where it's like he just fundamentally does not get jokes or understand comedy, and it makes him upset. And that's why he does stuff like he sits in the crowd at the correspondence dinner and then gets so mad that he runs for president at everyone, you know,
at like, everyone.
So so anyway,
are you the funniest dad in your group of dad friends?
Oh, I don't know.
Have you made dads from like having kids and guys are like, hey, you know, people say I'm pretty funny, Jesse. Yeah.
No, you know, I mean, I've had that more on like airplanes and with like just random people. Like so far, the like dads in my sphere have actually been pretty chill. Like,
awesome.
Like there's like, you know, and none of them, they all do different things. Like they're not all in the dumb entertainment business.
Right.
You know, like they do a variety of jobs for a living and like nobody seems particularly impressed with anybody else's job. Because it's Los Angeles, and it's like, it's fine. You know what I mean? So it all works out. So, yeah. And my son's now on a little baseball team. And there is, like, one guy who's also in comedy. And so it was like, oh, that's cool to have, like, a...
Yeah.
So like, he and I kind of go off and talk a little bit during practice because, you know, just watching them never catch a ball, you know, like that kind of thing. So, because they're six. Like, they're not good at baseball.
Bro, My nephew's new thing is to, he's nine, is to run up, hit me in the dick, and go, like and subscribe, and then run out of the room.
Oh, is that cause something, is that just the generic, cause he just is indoctrinated by YouTube videos? Or is he,
the like and subscribe
is roasting you specifically?
I think
cause you say that cause you have podcasts and things.
I think it's more from the first
of
seeing kids say on YouTube, like and subscribe.
Right.
But I'm sure they're hitting the dick. I mean, at our wedding, there must have been 11 people that came up to me the next day and were like, your nephew hit me in the dick really hard yesterday.
Just total strangers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, no, people at the wedding.
Yeah. No, no. Strangers,
oh, strangers
to him.
Yeah,
to you, I get. He's your own nephew. Like, I could see him punching you in the dick all day.
Yeah.
But, like, to just
random one of my groomsmen, he's, I mean.
Well, that's the problem.
Yeah.
That kid
and his
be.
Dad is a white rapper. My brother-in-law's name is Dirtay. Well, his name is Tim, but he's a white rapper named Dirtay.
Okay.
So I'm assuming some of the tough exterior and the, you can't cancel me, I can do what I want. You know, watch your fucking, you know, urethra around me is probably comes from having a rapper dad.
Yeah, I would,
I would assume your son with a comic dad is not going to be walking around trying to
he's never
take away people's ability to have children.
No.
Yeah.
No, he's never punched anybody in the dick as far as I know. But
any reports from school yet? My nephew bites kids at school.
No, they're pretty good kids,
That's
I think.
Awesome.
They
Yeah, you think, right?
Yeah. To the best of my knowledge, no. A kid peed on his leg. but I came to find out that was a funny joke. That it was not. I was worried that it was like, oh, is he getting like picked on? But it turns out he was like, that was hilarious. You know, when my buddy peed on my leg, you know what I mean? Like
awesome.
They were in the bathroom and then I did that too. When I didn't pee on anybody else, but I remember I would argue this is maybe my first joke ever.
Please.
I was like, it had to be same age. I had to be in like kindergarten or first grade, and we all had to change for gym class. And there was a folding chair in the bathroom, and I made a big scene of like, watch everybody, I'm gonna pee into the urinal from the folding chair, like fully knowing, and everybody was like absurd because I was like way across the room.
Yeah.
And I just peed like directly on the floor, you know what I mean? And it was like, ta-da, you know, like,
wow.
and everybody
standing
was like,
up.
Thought it was hilarious. And then there was this day is always, I've never really been able to piece this together, like the motivation of this. There was like an eighth grader who at the time seemed huge to me, you know what I mean? He seemed like a real authority figure.
Yeah.
But you've seen eighth graders. They're 11. You know what I mean? Like, they're not authority figures
at all. No, not at all.
Or whatever they are, 14. I don't know how old eighth grade. Yeah, but 14, the point is that this kid came in and he was like, get down from there. And then he grabbed me by the arm. He took me to the principal's office. He was like, why would this eighth grader
citizens
do that?
Citizens arrest?
Yeah, yeah. Like, he citizens arrested me in grade school. And he took me to the principal. And I think that this kid, the sense I've, you know, it's hard to piece together what how it really happened because it's through my tiny kid brain. But I think that the principal was like, oh, it's fucking Marcus again with another kid to report. You know what I mean? Like, so they were too busy. They didn't have time. So he like had me stand outside. And he's like, I'm talking to the principal. And then he was like, well, she's busy. But, you know, like next time or whatever like
God
that. Gave me a little speech.
Who's this? Where's this kid?
I don't know. I didn't remember his name.
It was
Mitch
McConnell,
wasn't it? I don't
remember
anything about him. But like, yeah, but it was like the craziest. So, but then I came finally came back to class and I was like kind of a hero because I pissed around the floor and everybody thought it was funny. And then, like, also I got sent to the principal's office and I was back. You know what I mean? Like,
wow.
I busted out.
Came back unscathed.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I also realized that at Valentine's Day, to say you had a hard-on was very funny. And I used to say that. I used to get laughs out of that when I was real small.
You were the jokester.
So, yeah.
Class clown?
No. Cause you know what I love? There's a Billy Crystal. Have you ever heard that Billy Crystal?
No.
He has a quote that people have asked him, like, hey, were you the class clown? He's like, no, the class clown is the guy who, like, would streak naked across the 50-yard line and steal a football at the homecoming game. And the class comedian's the guy who was like, hey, you know what would be funny if you did? You know, like the guy who, like, talked him into it. You
oh,
know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, I was, like, kind of more that guy. Like, cool. They were, like, louder. I know me starting out leading with I pissed on the floor makes it seem like I was a real Jim Carrey type. I can see why you would say that. I led this astray. But, no, I was more like the thoughtful joke guy, sort
okay,
of.
Okay, cool.
And, but there were definitely, like, you know, loud morons who were the class clown types.
Did you make teachers laugh?
Yeah, like teachers liked me because they thought I was like kind of funny and smart. And
man, what a gift.
So,
I mean, the amount of grades I think I salvaged by doing funny shit.
Yeah.
I mean,
you
and
too?
Just, oh my God, yeah. I would always convince the teachers to do a video, whether it was Spanish, like for some project or, you know, book reports in freshman year of high school. When we were doing
you
them,
could do.
I
like
wouldn't
a
read
video.
The. Oh yeah, I wouldn't read the book. I'd read the back of it.
Right.
And then one was called Summer of the Monkeys, and I read the back, and then did a fake like late night show where I had on Jonathan Taylor Thomas that played the kid who went to some jungle and befriended these monkeys. And I go, I think we have a clip of it. It was my buddy in the backyard, and he opens these bushes, and then he turns back, and he goes, I found the monkeys. And then it cuts back to me, and I go, man, I can't wait to see that, John. I go, dude, what's Tim Allen like? And I mean, the whole thing was.
Right.
But I mean, he's wearing this shitty wig.
Well, it shows that you were creative and whatever else, and like, you know,
always a B.
That yeah,
never an A. I mean, there was it was in camera editing, so like there was, you know, it was you'd hear like, okay, and go, you know,
right?
Or, fuck, dude, like we. I mean, it was all over the place, but got laughs in the room, and the teacher's just like, all right, funny and like enough laughs to be able to pass, and then some.
Mr. Custrin, God rest his soul, was my trigonometry teacher. And I did pretty well in school, but I got a 30% in trigonometry senior year. 30%. Like, that's not even a letter. It's really bad. Like,
what do
you
do? What do you write
I was, like, so shitty at math. Like, and I didn't care about it, and I didn't like it. And I, like, decided, like, fuck math. Like, I'm not going to.
Yeah.
Right? And so, like, but I wasn't, like, an asshole. I just was, like, I'm not going to get this. Like, So it was, like, the end of the year. It was, like, that would have kept me from graduating, right, if I got 30% in one of the things. And so I, like, had a meeting with Mr. Custrin. I was, like, hey, I'm going to be a stand-up comedian. And, like, if you see any reason why I would need trigonometry, then fine. But if you don't, I like a kind of a little presentation. I, like, showed, like, clips of – no, I didn't show clips, but I, like, talked about various comedians and that I like and how they don't use trigonometry.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that kind of thing. And I was like, so if you could see your way to not giving me a 30%, then letting me graduate, then when I am a headliner, I'll invite you to the Pittsburgh Funny Bone and you can sit or whatever. That whatever, some bullshit. I promised him tickets to a show that I wasn't even booked on. I hadn't even done stand-up yet at that point. And he gave me a B. I talked my way from a 30% to a fucking like 85 to
Holy
a solid
shit.
B. And I graduated with a solid B in trigonometry. And then sure enough, and then I did. I kept true to my, like, eventually then I ended up doing stand-up professionally and became a headliner. And I did reach out to old-ass Mr. Custrin, and he did come to the show.
Get the
and,
fuck
yeah, cool.
out of here,
so,
man.
Yeah, yeah, it was nice. It was a cool thing that he did. And I feel like he was like, the greater path here is like, yes, clearly this kid is not going to use trigonometry.
Yes.
And like, whatever. Like, it would.
Who am I to hold him back?
Yeah, it would be better. Like, whatever I ended up working out is like, oh, yeah, like, he's going to, He is indeed trigonometry. So
did you give him a shout out during the show?
I sure did. I told a little story. Yeah, yeah. So
that's bonkers.
Well, I told a story. I was inducted into my high school hall of fame because clearly there's not a lot of famous people who went to my high school.
Are there?
No, they're not. There's very few.
Also, but, you've done some pretty cool shit. So like, it's not.
Well, I told the story at that too, and like, you know, because it was like, you know, I wouldn't have graduated if it weren't for Mr. Custrin.
Wow,
so,
dude.
Anyway, yeah. How about
that's
that?
That's incredible. Was Pittsburgh before we wrap this up? Was Pittsburgh? I don't know, a,
like a good comedy town.
Yeah,
is where you're going with this.
Yeah, and like, well, I don't know your influences or who'd you, where'd you, I guess from people that your folks maybe showed you or who did, was there?
Oh
a
no,
comic?
My parents are not stand-up people. My parents are like opera people. Like they would never have set foot in a comedy club.
Wow.
If it weren't for the fact that I did stand-up for a
while.
So they're not. It's not their thing.
How do opera people view comedy?
Well, they like are proud of me and whatever, and like they like really like the book. They're like, "Oh, that was very funny," you know what I mean? And like
cool.
They'll watch Kimmel because they like they'll still think that's funny and whatever. But they're not like, whatever. They think I'm crude sometimes, you know what I mean? Like that kind of a vibe.
Sure.
But yeah, actually, there's one time I talked my parents into taking me to a comedy club. I think this is a fun story. It was in Nag's Head, North Carolina, and I was like 9. And my brother would have been 7, and we went to like on vacation, and they had like it was the 80s, so they had like a stand up night in like every fucking, you know, like tourist hotel or whatever. And so I was like, well, that's the thing I want to do this week is that. And my parents, because they would have never been to it, and so they were like, sure, I suppose, like they had no idea what it was or whatever. So we went and we sat there, and all I remember is there was like a that we sat down, and there was like a female comedian, and she started doing some sex joke. And my dad was like, we're out of here, right? And, like, grabbed us and, like, made us leave. And I was, like, mortified because, like, I knew whatever it was, I'm not supposed to be hearing this. But I just wanted to see how it worked, you know, like, to be in the room.
Yeah.
And so we left and we went. And there was, like, a mean old lady smoking cigarettes. And she was wearing a red dress. And my dad was like, we would like our money back. The show just started. And she goes, you brought a 7 and a 9-year-old to a comedy club. You're not getting your money back. You're a fucking idiot. That's what she said. So she called my dad like a fucking idiot in front of his children. And that was like the first time that had ever happened. So it like ruined the night. Like my dad was furious. Everybody was mad at each other. I was mad at them because I just wanted to see the show.
Yeah.
Like everybody else was mad because like, you know, my dad was stewing because he got this lady called him an idiot. So anyway, then I'm a professional comedian and like fucking whatever, like 25 years. I get booked in Nag's Head and I show up at this place. I'm like, this feels so familiar to me. And then when I see the owner of the club, I'm like, oh my God, it's the lady in the red dress. Like it was the same fucking lady, Anita Fletcher. She's smoking a cigarette.
No fucking
and
way.
I was like, you're never going to believe this. Like you probably won't remember this. I'm sure you won't. But I came here when I was 9 and I told her the whole story and you called my dad a fucking idiot. And she was like, well, your dad brought a child into a comedy club. He was a fucking idiot.
Oh, my God.
Like, she did it twice.
Doubles
she
down.
Did, she did it again. 20 years later, she called my dad an idiot twice. I was like, yeah.
Oh my God.
So I called my dad. I was like, hey, you know, remember that lady? She called you a fucking idiot again.
Anita Fletcher, is that her name?
That was her name, yeah. So right. It was just like dumb little like one-nighters and stuff around.
Yeah,
Nags
of course.
Head. This is years and years
those
ago.
Those hotel basement shows are always, I mean, fuck, I did a bunch of them out here.
Yeah.
So they're always, I don't know, there's those types of shows too. Are always imperative to the comedy world because you just need, you know, they're just, I don't know. Also, any place where there's a makeshift stage and set up and people are trying, like, I mean, it's, you're, you know, not everybody gets to start off at the great clubs, but.
Yeah, no, but it was like, they were like road gigs to me. They were like, you know, like, so it was really fun at the time, but like, yeah. But anyway, but yeah, Pittsburgh's not like a breeding ground for a lot of.
Okay.
But there, I can tell you who does it professionally.
Billy Gardell was out there when you were probably.
He kind of, I think, did more stand-up out here,
yeah,
but
okay.
He's from Pittsburgh.
Yeah, yeah.
Same with Jeselnik. He didn't really do stand-up in Pittsburgh,
right?
But he's from there. But the guys that came out of Pittsburgh were Dennis Miller and Mario Joyner.
Wow.
And Eddie Ift and Steve Byrne. And then I started.
Yep.
And then those guys. And that's
cool.
It. That's pretty much the entire Pittsburgh comedy scene.
Wow.
So, yeah.
They claim you, though.
Yeah. I haven't been back in a while because I started out at the Pittsburgh Funny Bone and that club doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
But it was like notoriously like shittily run and whatever.
Oh, really?
It was like the original Funny Bone, but then it kind of like they were like the people like, you know, that like stereotype in the 80s where people paid people in cocaine.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that was the Pittsburgh Funny Bone.
Gotcha.
There was a Bill Gates. See, I told you, I'm on like
bit.
The I'm on like the QAnon desk. So like his name is like in my head all the time.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
like
yeah.
So no, Bill Hicks had that Flying Saucer tour album.
Yeah, yeah.
That was like the one where he bombs for an hour. That was the Pittsburgh Funny Bone.
Wow.
And in it, he says right up there, they'll pay you cocaine. Like at one point, he says that and like fucking
and
like
narked
on them. Yeah, exactly.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
All right. Before we close this out with a little 10-question questionnaire, James Lipton style, I need
you to
tell people one more time where they can get the book.
Yeah. So it's on Scribd, S-C-R-I-B-D. And if you go to try.scribd.com/Jesse Joyce, the book is called Killing the Guys Who Killed the Guy Who Killed Lincoln, A Nutty Story About Edwin Booth and Boston Corbett. And you can get it there. And you can read the ebook or you can listen to the audiobook.
With the code...
Just try.scribd.com/Jesse Joyce.
Okay,
and
so
then
Jesse
it'll
Joyce.
Have a link that you can go to from there. So
can't wait.
Then you can follow me at Jesse Joyce or Jesse Joyce 1 on Instagram.
All right, we're going to close this out. I'm going to play James Lipton, RIP. You'll no doubt be on the show at some point. So I'm going to close this out with 10 questions to get to know Jesse Joyce
sure.
a little bit better. I'm Lipton. You're Jesse. Here we go.
Okay.
I'm here with Jesse Joyce. Jesse, what is your favorite word?
God, I feel like probably fuck because, I mean, it's in my book a lot.
What is your least favorite word?
Boy, I wasn't prepared for this, but
there's no wrong answer.
Yeah, no, I know, but still, Trump.
What so. Turns you on? Sexual or not? Matthew McConaughey said kindness.
Oh, he did?
And I said gay.
Yeah, that's silly. What turns me on? History, dorkery, taxidermy.
Mm.
How about that?
Yeah.
It's so weird. That makes you sound like a serial killer. I collect taxidermy.
Do you really?
I do, yeah.
Wow.
And I feel like it gets a bad rap in
sure
television and movies.
What are the what?
Like it's always the guy who ends up being the serial killer yes. is the guy with all the
taxidermy. Do you have like deers or like squirrels?
No, like exotic shit. Like I don't, cool. I'm not going to have deers. And like,
yeah, yeah.
Like I have a bear and a lion and
cool.
I have, what else? A Cotamundi. I have... a wallaby. I have all kinds of cool shit.
Cool.
Yeah. Anyway, go on. That's not part of this.
What turns you off?
Willful stupidity. Like people at I'm doing this wrong, right? Because I'm expounding into a whole
sentence. This is perfect.
You know, it's like a turn off because it's not. But when I go, people spouting misinformation to their children at zoos.
Mm.
Right? Because you're at the zoo with your kids, and then somebody will just go like, what is that, a bear? You know what I mean? And it's like, no, it's not a bear. It's a fucking...
Read the fucking, the spiel they got.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
People at the zoo, more often than not, want to act like they know more than the people that work at the zoo.
Oh, yeah.
I hear people
but it's just,
them
they
facts
just willfully,
all the time.
Yeah, there's like a sign right there, and it's like, what kind of bear is that? It's like, it's a binturong. It says right there what it is. Like, whatever.
Literally
they just
take
don't.
2 seconds and look down.
Yeah.
What is your favorite curse word? You said fuck, but do you have another?
Oh, I'm going to keep, no, because it's the best word. It
fuck is the best.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you hit the F hard or you kind of finish?
Fucking, like, I kind of just, I'll use it like in all sorts of, like it's an adjective sometimes. You
yeah.
know, like
it really is
I just
great.
Kinda, yeah.
If you're, so. If you heard your son say fuck at 6, would you laugh?
I wouldn't laugh. I would hold it together, but I wouldn't make a giant deal out of it.
Like I guess if he was like, "Where's my fucking mac and cheese?" or if
oh
he drops
yeah,
his
if
mac
he did
and
that,
cheese and goes, "Oh fuck."
Yeah, those are two different. Yeah,
yes.
yeah. Like right, both of them I know he would have gotten from me. You know what I mean? Like, but so I can't be that mad because
right.
it's like, well, this is my fault that he did that.
He's emulating
you know
pops.
I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
What sound or noise do you love?
These are absurd. These are absurd questions.
Well, this was Lipton.
Yeah.
This is how Lipton closed out the Actor Studio.
Yeah. You know, I like New York City traffic.
Oof, good answer. Yeah. What sound or noise do you hate?
I'm not good at this. These quick questions. I don't know. What sound do I hate?
Yeah, Pacino had these in advance.
Yeah, oh, did he?
I'm sure they
oh,
did.
Oh, sure.
I'm sure, yeah.
Yeah, okay. The start of a Christopher Walken impression. Well, you know, like that. I
oh,
hate that.
Oh, my God.
When somebody's about to launch into that. I hate that. Like,
what? But,
you know, like that. Like, as you know, it's like
time,
you're in for several minutes of something that's not funny and overdone.
What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Honestly, yeah, historian or nature documentarian.
Love that. What profession would you not like to do?
Mortician. Like, I can't imagine having to muster the give a fuck. Every time.
Yep.
Like you have to have your foot on the gas with sincerity every single day.
Yeah.
And every single day, more people's moms die.
Yeah.
And you have to like bring the same level of like, I'm very upset about it. You don't care.
No,
you know what
you
I mean?
Don't.
It's your job.
You get numb after
but
a while.
You must like bring that fucking enthusiasm is the wrong word, but that
it's the right word. You gotta care about them.
You have to pretend to care on a level that's like absurd.
Almost like, be excited to help. Like
yeah,
sorry, but like man, you're in such good hands. I'm like we're gonna you know.
And it's just waves crashing. There's always a new person, and you have to just keep like oh, I'm so sorry.
Every
you
day.
Know, like
and also looking at so many dead
and then
bodies.
You know, like and then they leave, and then you have to go back to your cell phone. You know what I mean? Like you know, like you have shit to do.
Yeah, dude, sending animal attack videos.
Yeah, yeah, you got to order from Costco. You know what I mean? And then like in the middle, then somebody else just lost their mom, and you got to fucking pretend to, you know.
Do you think there's a guy out there that's like they're coming in and they're just crying, and he's like, I'm sorry, just my postman's guy went to the wrong address.
Yeah,
one second.
Exactly. No, you can't do that at all.
I'll be outside.
You have to immediately put it down. Just be like, I'm so like, but that's what you want to be doing because it's your job.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. All right. That sucks. Last one. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
Oh God, this is so. This is so.
A real question.
James Lipton's not here. That's what I would want to hear him say. Good news, James Lipton isn't here.
Wow, Jesse Joyce, ladies and gentlemen, go get the book, watch Kimmel
Thank
every
you.
Night.
Thank you.
I love you, bud.
Thanks, buddy.
Thank you.
It's good to be here.